I mentioned derating when I was talking about parts and part standardization, but also that concept of the point of decision is where reliability occurs. And I think that really is appropriate or comes into play when we're thinking about electronics component selection. A basic motherboard on your computer may have a couple hundred components on it. A control module in your plant may have a couple hundred components on it. Some circuit boards have thousands of components on it. I think the cell phone is probably packed with components, all very, very small. Now, one of the principles of, what is derating methods? Derating, if you're not familiar with it, is very similar to stress strength calculations. It's looking at the stresses that are expected to be applied to your product, or for an electrical component in this case, and then what's its capability to withstand that stress. So it's very much a stress strength calculation. It's just that there's a limited number of components in electrical engineering, and so various studies and tables have been created that allow us to have a guideline of how to select the appropriate rated component for our particular application. Let's talk about that in more detail. So derating techniques, when I was at Hewlett-Packard, Dick Moss used to teach a design for reliability course. And it was a two-day course, of which a part of that course was a module for about an hour, I think, maybe 2 hours, on derating. And internally, we had our own set of derating guidelines, a set of basic rules for how to select components in order to make sure that they had enough margin. And it was basically, it broke down into a set of tables giving you the values of how much to increase the ratings, essentially, for your particular application. And it also talked about other notes of application, different scenarios, different best practices, things like that. And we had our own derating guideline contained all that. So Dick tells the story of going to one of the divisions of HP that was in Japan at the time and teaching the class. And one of the elderly gentlemen sitting in the back, who hadn't said very much of anything for the whole class, at the derating section said, "Now that's a good idea." And he noticed everybody taking notes and making a note of that comment. He didn't think much of it, but he followed up later and found out that that was the director of engineering, and it basically just issued the command that the organization should fully apply the derating guidelines to their products. Now, they had reasonable engineers before, and they had decent product performance. It was a test and measurement device. But they went through to every component in every circuit board and made sure it met the criteria within the derating guideline. Now, their engineers previously were already pretty good and intuitively had been applying these different margins in most cases. Now, they did find a handful of components and circuit boards that needed to be changed and the designs upgraded. In many cases, they were doing just fine. But what they did over the period of a year was redesign every single circuit board in their products, which was no small feat, but and maybe 10% of the components needed to be a different selection made to have more margin, more of to meet the derating guidelines. Now, the interesting part is that about a year later, Dick Moss followed up with them after they'd gone through that process and was monitoring their warranties and warranty returns, the cost of warranty, essentially. And even though their products were relatively long-lived, within 1 year, they were able to cut their field failure rate in half, and it cut their warranty in half likewise. They also saw a noticeable increase in market share as word got out that their products were very robust. So even for a team that does a pretty decent job already, just applying a consistent derating set of guidelines can help you to create more robust products, especially in specifically in electronics type products. All right, well, let's get into what it really is. So the idea is, let's say I've got a capacitor, and I think I used this example earlier, and I have a 5-volt circuit that I need to place this capacitor across, so the actual device will have 5 volts applied across it. Now, voltage tends to break down the dielectric if it gets too high. So the max rated value from the vendor is the maximum amount of voltage you can use across this capacitor without causing it serious damage. Now, it's not a safe operating limit. It doesn't guarantee that it'll operate for 30 years. It's just that if you keep increasing the voltage, the max rated voltage is where it should work for some short amount of time. And every vendor has a slightly different way of doing this. There's rarely a standard that applies that can help you understand exactly how they determine their max rated value. Now, it's in the vendor's best interest that their products just work. And many of them also provide derating guidelines of how to select the appropriately rated component for your application. Now, I'm using capacitors because it's the easiest one for me to remember, and it's probably a significant number of components in your product. But if you use a 50% derating, meaning that I would have to select a 10-volt rated capacitor for my application, that means that the stress that we expect to apply is 50% of my rating, is one way to think of it. And it allows that 5 volts to vary, which it more than likely will in various applications. It may go to 6 volts or 7 volts periodically, or it may be lower. But the variation allows me enough room, or the selected component based on the derating guidelines gives me enough margin that I can withstand the expected amount of variation plus a little more of unusual variation and not destroy that component, which just makes that component more robust for its particular application. Now, I've got a note on this slide for uprating. So let's say I have a 5-volt application and I'm not able to find a component that's rated to withstand 5 volts. This probably makes more sense at 5,000 volts, but we'll use the same units, 5 volts. So if I find a 3.5-volt rated capacitor that I have to use for this particular application, I'm going to be adding more stress than the vendor or the supplier thought was appropriate for this particular component. And that's called uprating, where I put it into service where it's going to be overstressed. Now, that usually comes with the caveat that that component is not going to last very long. It's going to accumulate damage more quickly. Now, derating applies for not just voltage on capacitor. It applies on inductors and resistors and all kinds of different components. Now, of course, there's different stresses than just voltage. There's temperature, which is a very common stress that we apply to accelerate the aging of our products. But it's also a rating or a stress factor that some components are rated for. This component is only rated to 100 degrees C or 80 degrees C. A CMOS technology breaks down pretty quickly at above 120 degrees C. So the ratings are typically a little bit lower than that. The Arrhenius law is based on a chemist, Arrhenius, who noticed the reaction rate for chemical reactions changed proportionally to temperature. And some reaction rates would double with every 10 degrees C increase in temperature. But that's specific for a particular activation energy. Some failure mechanisms or some chemical reactions have a much smaller response to a change in temperature, maybe only increase, say, 10% with a 10 degrees rise. And others will more than double with a higher activation energy. So it really is important to understand the failure mechanism for the components you're dealing with. But oftentimes that is built into the derating guidelines. So whether it's temperature or voltage or power or ripple current or some other factor, it's usually related, well, I should say always related, to specific failure mechanisms that cause that particular technology and that component to fail. And so the uprating part, you can go back to this physics of failure type approach and understand what's the change in failure rate that you would expect by going to uprating. But likewise, if you're just outside of the derating guideline, you still can calculate what's the change in failure rate and see what kind of risk you're taking. It may involve a much more serious redesign to use components that have meet all of the derating guidelines, yet that may well be the right choice given that the long-term reliability and robustness of your product is at stake. Now, a related factor to derating and stress strength calculations is what we call a safety factor. And it's the idea of, well, how much stronger than the expected loads should we be? And so just the ratio of the average strength over the average stress is what we call a safety factor. So if I'm using those capacitors as an example, we would say we have a safety factor of 2 is the typical idea there. So if my voltage is the stressor that or the measure I'm making about these capacitors, that if it's strong at 10 volts is its average strength, and our average load is 5 volts, we have a safety factor of 2. So it's hopefully that came across clearer than it sounded when I was saying it. But basically the idea of safety factor in derating are very, very similar. Now, another way to calculate these, and you may see it sometimes, is called a margin of safety. And there I'm looking at what's the margin and then divided by the stress. And again, it's a similar type of ratio to safety factor. It's just, it's phrased just slightly with a focus more on the margin rather than on the separation of the means. Another piece that we may use is called stress-strain diagrams. And this usually deals with metal fatigue and metal loading. And so many materials have a limit at which point they'll fracture. So whether the system is under tension or under shear or some other style of load, it probably has a point where it's going to fracture or give. And it allows us a way to, again, use this idea of derating or stress strength calculations to design the appropriate, choose the right materials and design it in such a way that it can withstand the expected loads and have some margin. Then when we're dealing with thermal cycling, it's also the same kind of situation. In many cases, many small cycles will lead to the very similar effect of much larger cycles. So we use this concept in accelerated testing very often, but it also applies as you start comparing materials and their responses to thermal cycling stresses. One way to aggregate these different stresses is called Miner's rule. And it's basically taking the proportions of the counts at different stress levels and then what's their accumulated damage at those different stress levels and allows you to add these. Now, it makes the assumption that the stress, the amount of damage at small loads is proportional to the amount of damage seen at higher loads and that you can model that relationship. But it does allow you to add what we call mini cycles, say a 5 degree C temperature swing when a computer is operating, plus the, say, daytime to nighttime and power on cycle, which may be 30 or 40 degrees C. So it's a way to account for different sizes of thermal cycling or different cycles of loads, for example. So in your organization, you probably have some concept of stress strength calculations, and maybe that's guided by safety margins and safety factors. But then you also may have the electrical folks working with derating. Now, those concepts are all interrelated and very similar, but do you have a policy? Do you have this set up? Even for non-critical systems, like you're not dealing with an aircraft wing, for example, but maybe a consumer product. The good idea is to have at least the derating guidelines and maybe some of those stress strength guidelines based on a safety margin or safety factor. It allows you, your organization, to be consistent and to consistently identify when something may be more at risk than something else. So even on simpler products, these policies and these guidelines can help you make a very robust and reliable product. Right. Next section, we're going to go back to talking about parts and parts management more directly, especially the obsolescence section.